Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Welcome back to the Jet Press Podcast. My name is Justin Freed, and I am joined, as always, by my man, Mike Luciano. Mike, it has been a wild week in Jets land. A lot has changed. A lot has happened since we were last live. So on this Wednesday, March 20th, 2024, how are you feeling, my friend?
Well, I'm a Jets fan, and it's the offseason, so usually that's pretty good. I don't know if that'll always carry over to the regular season. Maybe this will be the year it finally does. But it's hard to really complain about things that have gone down in the last 5 or 6 days because the Jets have a new left tackle, someone who is so much of a perfect fit, I almost didn't even think it was real. And we pretty much analyzed it as if, well, there's no way that's going to happen. Well, it did happen. Jets got him. And just the other day, the Jets have a new number two wide receiver. It is Mike Williams, formerly of the Los Angeles Chargers. The deal perhaps closed by a breakfast sandwich. As we'll discuss, shout out to NYJ Matt, which is surprising. As someone who, I'm going to make a confession here, I'm not a big fan of eggs. Like, I love, like, scrambled eggs in the morning, but I've never had a breakfast sandwich with egg on it, which not once.
Ever? Oh, Mike, this is...
I have scrambled eggs are okay, but I'm really not, I don't eat a ton of them, so...
This is a travesty.
Yeah, I've not had that. So, yeah, maybe that wouldn't have sealed my deal, but it sealed Mike Williams.
I'll make a confession then, because I'm from Long Island, right? So I'm not hip with this Taylor ham garb. What is the Taylor ham stuff? I don't know.
Okay, it's called number one. It's
any of that.
It's called pork roll. Sure. I know they made a typo and called it Taylor ham. It's called pork roll. Basically, you don't want to know what sort of meat's in it, but basically, it's a very thin strip of pork. It's like in little discs that you could either have on a sandwich. You could like fry it up. It's good for breakfast. It's like kind of like a hybrid between like bacon and a lunch meat ham kind of thing.
Is it like Canadian bacon? Is that what it is?
No, I could see how you'd think that. It's a little more like it's a little closer to like bacony kind of because it's big on breakfast. You could like grill it up and stuff like that. It's pretty versatile, but I just don't want to. If you want to, don't figure out what's in it. You're probably not going to eat it after.
I mean, look, if it's close to bacon, I'm just going to go bacon, egg, and cheese. That's Long Island.
Oh, yeah, it's a common substitute. It's a common substitute.
Long Island, New York City, we do bacon, egg, and cheese. You guys, you Jersey folks, you guys can do the Taylor ham or pork roll, sorry, whatever you want to call it.
I'm calling it that.
I have no stake in this. I don't care. I'm a bacon, egg, and cheese guy. That's my thing. But you don't even like breakfast sandwiches, so you can't even comment on this.
A pork roll sandwich with some cheese and you toast it, that's living. That is living. Sure, so man. Let's get off. So let's get off breakfast sandwiches.
Whatever Mike Williams wants, that's what I want. All right. If he wants to eat the pork roll, the Taylor ham and egg and cheese, whatever. If he wants to eat that, I'll eat it. That's cool.
Well, no, because Sauce Gardner had that disgusting thing with hot Cheetos and
dare I say, you mentioned that you might eat that at some point.
Oh, yeah. I still got to eat that. So, yeah, I got to actually get the ingredients is the tough part. But let's move off breakfast sandwiches and move on to football. As always, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Overcast, wherever you get your podcasts. We're on all those sites, YouTube and TikTok, the Jet Press for both of them. Let's just dive right into it because the Jets have a new wide receiver, too. It is Mike Williams, something that we discussed as a potential home run hire. Kind of home run signing kind of move. Well, they hired him technically, I guess.
Yeah, they hired him employed
by the Jets for 1 year and $15 million if everything goes according to plan and he hits the maximum number of incentives possible. Hard to find fault with it because really the only negatives I feel like I could find with this, and we're going to talk about this too with Tyron because I don't want to just keep repeating myself. A lot of the negatives are going to be, well, if he can stay healthy.
Sure.
And yeah, you can say that for every player, but especially with these two guys, because Mike Williams has a bit of a checkered history when it comes to staying healthy, only played in 3 games last year. He's missed time pretty much every year he's been in the league, except for 2018 and 2021. He's pretty much had some sort of injury. And they're mounting, and he's going to turn 30 in the middle of the season. So this is not some spring chicken here. And very rarely do guys just turn into the Wolverine and recover from injuries when they're 30. So you got to take that into account. But if he's healthy, you could not get a better wide receiver two for this team. In his last 17 games when he's been healthy, the results are pretty encouraging. 91 catches for 1,263 yards and 6 touchdowns. And that's with sharing targets with Keenan Allen. Justin Herbert's throwing the ball a lot. I get it, but that's pretty solid production. Maybe it's my own biases with building a football team, but I kind of like having a nice stylistic contrast between your top two receivers. I like there's the speedy underneath, great separator in Garrett Wilson, and then the big physical deep threat jump ball red zone guy in Mike Williams. Now, they wanted Alan Lazard to be that, and now I don't want to go relitigate the Alan Lazard era, but even Alan Lazard would probably tell you Mike Williams is an upgrade. He's faster. He's probably better just with in terms of verticality, just getting up there and winning those 50-50 balls. He's not going to offer, I think, as much after the catch as some Jets fans may have liked. And I know Nathaniel Hackett doesn't have a ton of things he believes in offensively that work because he's Nathaniel Hackett and he stinks. But it does seem like he wants to get the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hands pretty quickly. So Williams won't necessarily help with that as like a yak guy. But that's all nitpicking right here. That's looking at Cindy Crawford and going, oh, she had that birthmark. Well, it's still Cindy Crawford. Like, we got Mike Williams. He's going to be the number two next to Garrett Wilson. Maybe this partnership extends past a year, but just for this year, which is the make the playoffs and end the streak or everybody's fired year. I mean, this is a tremendous signing. I'm thrilled with this.
I always love your analogies, Mike, comparing Mike Williams to Cindy Crawford.
I'm telling you, look, we got a couple. I know we have a lot of younger fans, but we got some, you know, 40s, 50s. They're high five right now going, I remember Cindy Crawford back in the day.
Even older than 40s, 50s. Like 40s is too young for Cindy Crawford, I feel like.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Life can always use more Cedar Point. And right now, you can get more Cedar Point for less with the Fun Day Bundle for just $74.99. Each bundle gets you admission, parking, and all-day dining for one low price. That means more coasters like Steel Vengeance and more nostalgic fun in the boardwalk area. But you better hurry because this bundle won't last. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Yeah, but yeah, no, I completely agree. This was my dream signing for the Jets as of, you know, a week ago, whenever it became realistic that he was going to be on the market, which it always seemed like he was going to be released. I think he had like an over $30 million cap hit with the Chargers. They were going to move on. And this is a dream signing for the Jets. Like you said, a perfect complement to Garrett Wilson. And pretty much, I would say, of any of the options that are realistic remaining on the market, the only true wide receiver two. He's a high-end wide receiver two, not just you know, a middle-of-the-pack wide receiver two. This guy's a high-end wide receiver two. He has a pair of 1,000-yard seasons under his belt. And, you know, we could talk about the injury concerns. I think maybe this is going to be a cop-out. I think they're simultaneously overblown and also a little understated. And what I mean by that is, in terms of games missed, overblown. Before the torn ACL this past season, where he only played three games,
That's a hell of a qualifier. I'm just going to say that, though.
Sure, it is. But even before the torn ACL, he already had like a reputation as like, oh, can he stay healthy? That was already a thing that was following him. But I feel like it was a bit overblown. From 2019 or 2018 to 2021, he played 15 or 16 games in every one of those seasons. Played 13 games in 2022, so he only missed four games there. And then he had the torn ACL. It's mostly just been a lot of nagging injuries with him. I know he has the history of back issues. That's something to worry about, dating back to his time in college. And I think that's where it becomes understated, because even though he hasn't missed a lot of games, he still deals with injuries on a yearly basis. Every single year in the league, he's dealt with something, whether he's played through it or not. So it is something to be concerned about. It is something to think about. And as a reason that the Jets were able to get him for, you know, a one-year deal. I don't know what the exact contract details look like, what the guaranteed is, money is, but if he didn't have the injury worries, he obviously would be making a lot more in the open market. So that is a genuine concern. But for the most part in his career, he has been able to play through it and still play at a very high level. How high of a level? I would say he's one of the best contested catch receivers in the entire NFL. He is everything the Jets wanted Alan Lazard to be and significantly more. In his last season in 2022 with the Chargers, he only played 13 games. He had one drop on 90 targets. That's a 1.6% drop rate. It's one of the best marks in the NFL, obviously, over that time. It's not only just drops either. It's not just like, oh, he never drops the ball. Even in contested catch situations, he's among the best. Last season, he only played three games, caught 71% of contested catch opportunities. The season before that, 57.7. He's never had a season in his career. The lowest contested catch percentage that he's had in a season in his career was 48.3, which I don't have Alan Lazard's numbers off the like right in front of me. I could probably look them up, but I cannot imagine even his best seasons are like close to that. Mike Williams is everything the Jets want in a traditional X receiver. It'll allow them to move Garrett Wilson all around between the slot and have him on the outside. I think it opens up a lot more for him, and it gives the Jets a perfect, perfect complement for a probably reasonable price and no long-term commitment. You're committing to 1 year. Maybe they'll add void years. They might have some dead money in the future, but this is not a long-term commitment. The Jets are going all in on this season, as we'll talk about with the Tyron Smith signing as well. Every issue that I had with how Joe Douglas had handled the offseason to this point, last time we spoke, last Wednesday, has been completely resolved. I have no issues. I have nothing to complain about what has happened over the last 4 days. And the Mike Williams signing is a proof of that. The Jets went all in. The Jets swung for the fences with a guy like Mike Williams. And yes, there isn't an injury risk associated with it, but it's a risk you have to take. The ceiling with this team now, and we could talk about this more when we talk about Tyron Smith, the ceiling with this team is Super Bowl. The floor is low because of the injury concerns, genuinely, of course, and we don't know what to expect from Aaron Rodgers. I know a lot of people are just expecting him to be the Aaron Rodgers of old, but it's been a few years since we've seen that, and he's coming off the torn Achilles. So obviously the floor isn't nearly as high as you'd like it to be, but the ceiling with this Jets team is legitimately not only Super Bowl contenders, but Super Bowl winners. And the Mike Williams signing is the evidence of that, and it solidifies that.
I mean, there's so much of it's going to depend on Rodgers, obviously. Like the Williams move, they're probably not going to win or lose an extra game because of the Williams sign. Like you look at the Vegas odds, I don't think their over-under pretty much changed before and after Mike Williams. But just stylistically, this is a move that needed to happen. The injury concerns, like I don't think it's necessarily – like you brought up he's not missing a ton of games. I think it's the type of injuries too, because it's an ACL when you're going to be 30 and – I mean, he led the league in yards per catch. He's a speed vertical guy. Like, that's important, your ACL. And then the back injuries, I mean, your back's your whole body. So if your back gets messed up, you know, that could be really and back injuries do not go away for a very long time. He's going to be 30. So there are real concerns here. But, I mean, think about what else was going to be. We're going to have to talk ourselves into Odell Beckham again. That was the other option. If they didn't get Mike Williams, they probably would have spent maybe 8 figures. On Odell Beckham, because for some reason, even though his production isn't really what it was, Odell Beckham has this weird like PR behind him where he just gets an extra money based on what he's like. Look at what the Ravens paid him last year.
Crazy.
For basically 600 yards as like an okay wide receiver three. Like they tell you that probably wasn't worth the money. And the Jets would have probably paid something close to it because, well, he's Odell Beckham. We got to get him in here. So the idea that they could have spent maybe 10, 11 million on Odell Beckham or 15 million max, if everything goes right, on Mike Williams, I mean, that is not a big discrepancy for a clearly superior player.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think Williams, I don't know if he'll get 1,000 yards necessarily because there's going to be tight end additions possibly. Garrett Wilson's still going to be the guy. I think Mike Williams went into this knowing Garrett Wilson's going to be the guy. They just signed two power running linemen, and Breece Hall's still there. It's probably going to be a run-first team, if we're being honest. They're going to ride Hall a lot. I get all that, but in your dreams, you're thinking, man, if the Jets had a wide receiver, too, who was big and just had straight-line speed, because Lazard was supposed to be that and he wasn't, I mean, find me a better one.
Yeah.
Find me a better one. Like, we've ripped Joe Douglas a lot, but he's trying. Like, you could rip Douglas for the Lazard contract, like – he made an effort here. I don't know how this will turn out, but damn it, he tried.
He did, and this is what he had to do because he knows his job is on the line. He knows that if the Jets don't not only make the playoffs this year but make some sort of noise, there's a good chance he's fired, Robert Saleh's fired, everyone's fired. We all talked about the Jets having to go all in this season, that Joe Douglas had to go all in. I know the first few days of free agency were pretty slow, but they got their guys at the price that they wanted, specifically Tyron Smith. They absolutely got him at that price. The other thing I'm glad you mentioned, too, is because I still expect the Jets to lean on their ground game, especially because of the changes that they made on the offensive line. And Mike Williams is an excellent run blocker. That really, really helps. That's part of why they love the Alan Lazard signing, because he was supposed to be a good run blocker coming in. Unfortunately, the guy can't play receiver, and he definitely was not giving 110% when he was out there. I don't expect that to be the case at all with Mike Williams. Mike Williams is an excellent, excellent run blocker. Gives them another guy that they could lean on in that ground game as just being a force. And I love the move. I think it is. I don't even know if it's the best move that they made, because the Tyron Smith signing might be there as well. But just those two combined, honestly, those two moves combined, if we're of course ignoring the Aaron Rodgers trade, are significantly better than anything the Jets did last offseason. Like, we're not going to just be homers for the sake of it. I was on this podcast for, you know, the entire summer last year being like, you know, I don't really love what the Jets did in the offseason. Like, I love that they traded for Aaron Rodgers, but didn't love the Lazard signing. Definitely did not love the Cook signing. I don't think that they had adequately addressed receiver. I didn't love the draft class. It was a lot that I did not like about the offseason last year, and I think that Joe Douglas messed up a lot of things. I think that going into this offseason, he's now done a really good job of trying to correct a lot of those mistakes. Now, a lot of them are short-term moves, because that's the window that the Jets are operating in. They're not signing guys to 3-4 year contracts, because that's not their window right now. Their window is 2 years. That's what it seems to be. They're signing, you know, they signed John Simpson to 2 years. Morgan Moses and Tyron Smith are both on 1 year deals. Mike Williams is on a 1 year deal. They're very much operating within that short-term window of success and window of opportunity. And that's what they're going to try and capitalize on. So the goal right now is build as good of a roster as you can in 2024 and potentially 2025. And that's what Joe Douglas is doing. Again, the floor is going to be low because of the injury risk associated with some of these players. The floor is already low because of the injury risk associated with Aaron Rodgers. But the ceiling is significantly higher than it was going into last season, because they went into last year expecting Aaron Rodgers to elevate everybody around him and just be that guy. If Aaron Rodgers can even be 80% of that guy, the Jets are still Super Bowl contenders, and that's because of the moves that they've made around him.
I think part of why I was a little more optimistic about last offseason than you were is, number one, like, the Rodgers factor would have helped, like, indisputably, sure, would have made them a better team. Just the idea of what happened, that was just inconceivable that that could even be an option. So I didn't even factor that into the calculus. And number two, I think I erroneously judged how deep they were at certain positions, where I'm like, you know what? Like, they certainly do it. They don't have the deepest wide receiver room. This is before Corey Davis retired too. Like,
right,
yeah, there are some issues there. And maybe I don't love like the safety room, or maybe they could use one more playmaker, but you know, you'll have Rodgers, you'll have your young playmakers who are still really good. Like, at the end of the day, those two things will overcome it. And then Rodgers went down and they just didn't. Like, looking at the roster now, I'm more optimistic now, because honestly, not to get like, this is going to really come back to bite me in the ass, but if you look at the Jets just depth chart right now, from just their starting 22 players, 11 on offense, 11 on defense, is there one hole where you're like, man, this is a huge hole they got to fix? I really don't see that right now.
Other than wide receiver 3, which I still think they're going to address, no. They don't really have a good wide receiver.
Even then, they might go 2 tight ends for base if what we think could happen happens in the draft, and then that's a whole different conversation. Yeah, I could see them maybe getting another wide receiver. They could draft 1-2 in like day 2 or something like that. Do they need another safety? Probably. Another backup edge rusher? Probably. Maybe they get a veteran backup running back. Those are all there, but like, yep. The two big fires they had to put out was, you need a wide receiver too, and a real game changer at that. They get him. You need to completely redo the offensive line on the fly. And in 2 weeks, Simpson, Moses, Tyron Smith.
Yeah, 1 week. 1 week.
If you go chronologically, yeah.
Yeah.
In a week, basically. Completely remade it. Gave Vera Tucker a position where he can just stick there. You say, Joe Tippmann, we're confident in you. You're our starting center. I mean, we don't like Joe Douglas for what he did the last couple of years, but he needed to redeem himself. And if he doesn't win games, he won't redeem himself, but he's certainly on the path right now.
100%. And let's talk about that offensive line, because, you know, we already had the John Simpson signing, which admittedly I've warmed up to now that I know he is the fifth best offensive lineman in that starting unit. I think you would absolutely live with that. But the Morgan Moses trade was brilliant. We got to talk about that last week. That was a great value trade for the Jets. And then the Jets go out and sign Tyron Smith, which I believe we mentioned him as a possibility on the last show, but neither of us thought it was realistic. We're over here sitting like, oh, it's inevitable. They're going to sign David Bakhtiari, which maybe they still will. And, you know, maybe like a Donovan Smith or something like that. Oh, he could play for his hometown Jets. No, the Jets go out and sign a guy who was second team all pro last season in Tyron Smith. Again, as is
probably a Hall of Famer. He retires today. I think he's a Hall of Famer.
First ballot Hall of Famer. I think he's a 5-time all pro, 8-time pro bowler. He's never won a championship, unfortunately. Maybe that changes. But he's a Hall of Famer. He's one of the best left tackles of his entire generation. If it wasn't for injuries, he would have gotten – I think he would have had maybe a Joe Thomas-like career if it wasn't for injuries kind of derailing these last, like, five, six years where he's kind of struggled to fully play full seasons. And, of course, like with Mike Williams, that is a concern with Tyron Smith. He hasn't played a full 16-17-game season since, I believe, 2015.
More than 13 games a year in that time frame.
Which is so consistent. It is. Now, if the Jets can get what the Cowboys got out of Tyron Smith last season, awesome, because he played 13 games. Sure, he missed 4 games. I do not expect Tyron Smith to play 17 games for the Jets this season. I don't think that is a hot take. It's kind of like the Dolphins trying to deal with Teron Armstead. But I think that Tyron Smith is just better than Teron Armstead. No offense to Teron Armstead is a great player. Tyron Smith, like you said, is a Hall of Fame caliber left tackle. And once again, just like with the Mike Williams signing, this significantly raises the ceiling of what the Jets are capable of. Now, as JP Jets asks from Twitter, he said, should we add more O-line depth? Yes, absolutely. And I mentioned Bakhtiari. I do think Bakhtiari is still a possibility for the team. I think that would probably be something that they address or at least reconsider after the draft. I think the Jets will go into the draft, and that's something that we'll talk about in a little bit when we talk about what the Jets can do with the 10th overall pick. But the Tyron Smith signing gives them so much flexibility going into the draft, as does the Mike Williams signing. The Jets can draft the tackle at 10. They don't need to, but they can. And if they don't feel satisfied with their depth after that, they could revisit a David Bakhtiari situation. Maybe Donovan Smith is still on the market. Maybe there's other swing tackle options that are still out there. They will
Josh
have
to Jones.
Josh Jones, sure, whoever. They will have their pick after the draft that they still want to address it. But as for Tyron Smith, absolutely. Like it significantly raises the ceiling of what this Jets offensive line is capable of. If healthy, this is the best Jets offensive line they've had since their AFC championship runs. I don't think that's a hot take. I think most people would agree with that. I think 1 through 5, like left tackle to right tackle, this is a really, really solid starting offensive line. And it's great, like you mentioned, Mike, that Vera Tucker gets to finally stay in one spot. Not only does he stay at one spot, we talked about for most of the offseason that Vera Tucker makes more sense as a tackle because of how loaded this guard class was. He is better at guard. I'm happy he's staying at guard. I said move him to tackle because it just made more sense. I figured financially it would be easier to address the offensive line that way if you moved him to tackle and then signed a guard. Instead, they went out and got Tyron Smith, John Simpson, and Morgan Moses for basically the same cap hit as Robert Hunt. That's insane. Robert Hunt, I love Robert Hunt, and we talked about him. He was probably one of my favorite options for the Jets. He got $20 million a year from the
Carolina. 9 figures from the freaking Panthers.
He's a good player, and he's a good young – like, I really do like Robert Hunt. He's an above-average young guard. That's what I would classify Robert Hunt as. The Jets got 3 new starters, including a guy who was a second-team All-Pro last season, and a guy in Morgan Moses who is still a very good above-average starting right tackle. They got 3 new starters for basically the same price as Robert Hunt. So for as much shit as we've given Joe Douglas in the past and as much of that shit has been deserved, unbelievable job revamping the offensive line for the value that he did it at and giving the Jets flexibility going into the draft. The Tyron Smith signing was shocking, genuinely shocking to me. I didn't think they would do it, but I could not be happier that they did.
I'm thrilled. And we discussed it as like, well, Tyron Smith would be ideal, but you're not going to get Tyron Smith. I mean, we pretty much said some variation of that how many times on this show, and then they got the real deal.
Did it.
Now, the Smith contract, for those of you that don't know, like we're saying $6.5 million, it can go up to $20 million, which is, I think, why he signed, because $20 million a year for a 33-year-old left tackle who's been hurt for pretty much the last decade, like that's a big investment. But the way it basically works is more money gets guaranteed with snap percentages. So he starts off at 6.5, and then there's like 10 different qualifications of if he hits this percent, he gets this much. But essentially, with every game he plays, he'll pretty much get more money guaranteed. So it's almost like a rolling contract. Like you get paid on game day.
Yeah.
That's almost that word. It's a very unique structure, but if he plays all 17 games, if I get it, but if he plays all 17 games, he's going to get as much money as any left tackle on the market. And you know what? Deserved. Because he was, I believe he was PFF's best pass blocker last year, and he's 33 with a bunch of injuries.
Yep.
He's still, he's still the big giant guy with long arms, experienced guy, great run blocker too. Like, he's not just a pass blocking guy. Like, Tyron Smith is going to get a gold jacket someday. And he's the best left tackle this team has had since one of the most underrated players in recent NFL history to Breckenshaw Ferguson. Like, since Ferguson left, it's been a bunch of, you know, veterans trying to restart their careers or bust left tackles, Mekhi Becton. Like, it's just been kind of plugging the gaps, which is not how you want to fill your left tackle spot, for crying out loud. Now, even though it's a one-year thing, could you get a better left tackle for 1 year than Tyron Smith? I mean, right now, how many left tackles in the league are better than Tyron Smith? Like, three, four? Like, not many.
I think it's in, like, if you told me a week ago or a little over a week ago, I just, like, say Monday of last week, first day of legal tampering period, that the Jets' two starting tackles would be Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses. Like, that's not even best case scenario. That was nuts. I did not think that was possible. One, I didn't think Morgan Moses would be traded. That came as a big surprise. And two, not only me, the Jets did not think they could get Tyron Smith. As has been reported a lot now, the Jets went into free agency being like, oh man, it'd be great if we can get Tyron Smith, but that's unrealistic. And then Thursday rolls around and he's still on the market. And they're like, what's going on here? Why is this, he's still out there. Let's make an offer. They make
shoot
him
the shot, man. Send that DM. Sometimes it works.
Exactly. They shot their shot. They offered him $6.5 million. How the contract structure is structured, like you said, Mike, there's a lot of incentives. The cap hit this year is $12.25 million. The remaining incentives, or the remaining cap and incentives, if he does reach those incentives and hit those marks, that cap will be counted towards next year's cap. But for now, like, his cap hit this year is going to be $12.25 million, which for a player of Tyron Smith's caliber it's amazing. Like, you cannot ask for a better deal. But the Jets didn't expect they were going to do it. And then they offer him this contract. As reports have gone, the Jets expected Tyron Smith to kind of just use that contract as leverage in negotiations with other teams. And then they call him back, I believe, on Friday, or he calls them back on Friday and is like, all right, let's do the deal. And they were stunned. They could not believe it. And neither could Jets fans. Neither could we. What a great day. What a great time. As JP Jets asked again about David Bakhtiari, he said, do you really think we can sign David Bakhtiari? Yes, I fully believe so. I don't think David Bakhtiari is going to get a starting opportunity with another team. He's a guy who's played one game in two of the last three seasons. While reports are saying he's determined to play again this season, I've not seen anything that says a definitive timeline that he will be back by training camp, will be back by whatever time. I don't think any team is going to rely on him as a starting left tackle. I think it would be a mistake if any team did it. The only team that would have possibly done it would have been the Jets because of the Aaron Rodgers connection and because they could go into the draft and potentially draft somebody as well. I don't think any team is going to do that. So for Bakhtiari, it's really going to be trying to pick a spot to be a depth tackle, a backup tackle. And what better spot would it be than the Jets, than with Aaron Rodgers, than with Nathaniel Hackett? And obviously that doesn't matter if the Jets draft a tackle. Like, if the Jets draft a tackle at 10, I don't think they're signing Bakhtiari. That wouldn't make much sense to me, because even if it's like a Taliesi Fuaga, who's a right tackle, you still have Carter Warren, who they're reportedly high on that they want to develop. So signing Bakhtiari, trying to develop Carter Warren, also drafting another tackle, that'd be a lot of cooks in the kitchen. I don't think they would do that. But if they're not satisfied with their tackle depth after the first or after the draft, 100%. Absolutely. I think there's a very, very real chance the Jets still sign David Bakhtiari. And, you know, Bakhtiari and Smith alone might not be able to play 17 games, but I'd hope, knock on wood, that together combined, they can come close to playing 17 games. That would be the hope.
A lot of cooks in the kitchen, and the head chef is Keith Carter. That's not what you want.
I saw a tweet.
Does Tyron Smith even need to be coached? Like, what is Keith Carter going to tell Tyron Smith about playing the offensive line?
Tyron Smith should be the coach. I saw a tweet. It was like the two things that could ruin the Jets offense. And it was like a picture of the MetLife Field and then Nathaniel Hackett. But you could also just throw Keith Carter in there too. Like they got so much talent on this offense now. The two things that could ruin it are injuries and the coaching staff. That's the only two things
that
could ruin
it. I even thought that when they had Dwayne Brown last year. Like, I get the younger, like, what could Keith Carter say to Dwayne Brown, who's a borderline Hall of Famer, I think? I don't think he'll get in, but I think he's like first ballot Hall of Very Good.
Yeah.
He played forever, Pro Bowls. What could Keith Carter tell him about playing the offensive line? Like, honestly, if Dwayne Brown said, look, I'm going to retire, I want to join as like an assistant offensive line coach, like, that would be preferable to Keith Carter.
Yes.
I feel like Dwayne Brown would be a better coach. And I feel like Tyron is in that area where it's like, all right, you're the coach for the other guys. Like, I can handle it. Let me do what I do. I would not be surprised if, honestly, that's the arrangement going on. And I wouldn't hate it.
Right.
The less Keith Carter, the better. One quick thing, though, is before we move on to, I think, our next draft discussion. I'm looking at all these signings, and I'm happy to finally put to bed kind of the thing that we've seen a lot over the offseason, which is, I mean, how many times have we discussed possible free agents, possible trades? What was the common refrain from the pessimists? It was, well, who's going to want to play in New York? Who's going to want to play for Nathaniel Hackett? Who's going to want to play for Robert Saleh, this clown show? Well, Tyron Smith wants to. Mike Williams wants to.
Yeah.
I don't know what the league thinks about Saleh. I feel like the league at least acknowledges he's a good defensive coach and a nice guy, if nothing else. I don't know what the league does not like Hackett. I know that. I don't know what they think of Douglas, what they think of the Jets organization, but they like Aaron Rodgers. As weird and strange and as he can be, they like playing with him. They want to win games with him. And I mean, how many teams are after Tyron Smith? How many teams are probably after Mike Williams? And they chose to go to the Jets. So that, as long as they have Rodgers, I don't know how long it's going to be. It might be 1 year, might be two, might be three. I don't know. As long as they have that, they're a legitimate threat to sign a lot of these big free agents just because of the Rodgers factor, even if they have Hackett hanging off. And New York, specifically the Jets, the state taxes are high, so you're not going to get as much money in your contract. You're not going to have the whole market to yourself because you're going to share with the Giants. Don't have a history of winning. Like, this is not an attractive spot just on paper. But because you have Rodgers, I think it really makes an impact on these guys. And I think that's why Tyron, like, what was he going to do? Go sign a contract with the Titans and try to, like, protect, you know, Will Levis or something like that, or another team with a young quarterback, Carolina, and block for Bryce Young. Like, he wants to get that ring. And he thought that of all the teams out there that probably want his services, a lot of contenders need offensive line help, he thought best chance right now is with the Jets and Aaron Rodgers. And I think that says a lot.
It does. And I think the other part of it, too, and I believe both of us have been guilty of this, probably because of just how pessimistic we kind of – or at least I was very pessimistic going into the offseason – I have been very pleasantly surprised that of all the signings the Jets have made, none have been a very obvious, like, oh, that's an Aaron Rodgers signing. They did this to satisfy Rodgers. They did this because Rodgers wanted that guy.
I'm sure Rodgers likes Tyron Smith.
Oh, I'm sure he does, but that wasn't made because of Aaron Rodgers. That wasn't because of, like, oh, this is Aaron Rodgers' buddy, or Aaron Rodgers was like, sign this guy. I think last offseason, you can make a case that a lot of guys that the Jets ended up signing were Rodgers signings, were Nathaniel Hackett signings. Now, they're just signing good players. Like that's what it's become. And I don't know if it's, you know, I think that a lot of the quote unquote Rodgers guys were targets and were contingency plans. Like, I think that if the Jets didn't get Mike Williams, they 100% would have pivoted to Odell Beckham and Marquez Valdes-Scantling, either both of them or one of the two. And those would be Rodgers moves for sure. And I think if the Jets didn't get Tyron Smith, David Bakhtiari was absolutely still in the conversation to be that left tackle. But because they didn't have to resort to those contingency plans, because they landed the big fish, because they made the big swings. And this isn't like a Dalvin Cook situation where I've seen other people point that out and be like, oh, they're just signing washed up old veterans too. You know, that's why they got Tyron Smith and Mike Williams. They're good. They're still good. They're still good players. Dalvin Cook was not good. I said it before the Jets signed him. I said it after they signed him. I said it when everyone realized he sucked. He was bad when they signed him. This is not a similar situation. I mean, maybe Mike Williams is cooked. I have no idea. Maybe Mike Williams is like, he never recovers from the ACL. But the last time we saw him play and the last time we saw Tyron Smith play, which was last season, they were both still great, great players. And it's not the same situation as just the Jets signing like older, washed up guys. We'll talk about this maybe a little bit later if we get into it. I've seen people mention that with like Ezekiel Elliott too, where it's like, oh, have you not learned from Dalvin Cook? Zeke sucks. Zeke's still all right. He's not like Zeke. He's not the Zeke of 6 years ago, but he's all right. I hate whenever
he's better than Cook was.
He's absolutely better than Dalvin Cook was. Not only that, he actually fills a role that the Jets need. He's a much better complement to Breece Hall than Dalvin Cook. Again,
great blocker too for a running back.
A very good pass catcher. You know, great blocker, unless he's playing center and snapping the ball. That's different.
Well, what are you expecting there?
I'm kidding. I know.
Was a defensive lineman just get a free shot at him?
I'm joking. Obviously, I agree.
I forgot all about that play. That was weird. Thanks.
That was a very weird play. But we can talk about that later. But I hate when people group in all like old veterans. They're all the same. They're all washed. No, they're not. Guess who wasn't washed last year and people said he was? DeAndre Hopkins. All right. I hate when people just kind of umbrella term all of them. I'm going on a weird tangent here, but that goes for the people that are criticizing the Tyron Smith and Mike Williams signing, because they're saying it's that logic of,
and sometimes it's relevant. It's that threat of, well, if they're so good, then why didn't they everybody keep? Like, I get that. Mike Williams was a complete money thing.
Yeah, he probably was making $30 million a year. Like, his cap was almost $30 million.
That was a money thing. Tyron, yeah, they probably wanted to get him back, but probably after injury after injury after injury, they're like, you know what? He probably could still be good, but we're in a good spot to draft a left tackle. Dak's costing a ton of money. We got to pay CeeDee Lamb. Like, we can't pay him and pay everybody. We can't pay Micah Parsons. God, I can't even imagine the contract Micah Parsons is going to get. We can't give CeeDee his money, Micah Parsons his money, and Tyron his money with Dak having a big contract. Like, it's a money thing. It's not just they think Tyron Smith is bad. If they do think Tyron Smith is bad, that's an indictment on them and Mike McCarthy, because I think Tyron Smith is still one of the best left tackles you're going to find in the AFC. And hopefully the roof doesn't cave in like it did last year. But on paper, this offense is looking a lot better.
Yeah, and it's also an injury thing too. And we talked about the injury concerns as well. Not every team is in the same situation as the Jets. Not every team has a 1 to 2 year window where they're trying to win a Super Bowl. That is not the mindset for most teams around the NFL right now. The Jets are in a very unique situation where they're trying to load up on guys. Even if they have low floors, they want to raise that ceiling. That's what they want to do. They want to go all in with a chance to win the Super Bowl. If the stars align, they can win a Super Bowl. That's what they want. It would have been harder to win the Super Bowl last year, even with Aaron Rodgers, because the roster was not as good as it is this year. Now, I think the defense is still going to be great. It really hurts losing Bryce Huff, but overall, this roster is probably better now than it was last season, assuming that Rodgers, you know, is healthy. But I think the team around him is better, especially on offense.
You cannot like losing Bryce Huff, but if the justification is, well, the money we would have spent on Bryce Huff, we now spend on Mike Williams and Tyron Smith, that's a pretty good – instead of also restructuring and kicking the can down the road to keep them all, we're saying we're not going to restructure as much. Here's what we're going to spend, X amount of money in free agency. This is our budget. And instead of doing Bryce Huff, we allocated it to a number two wide receiver and a Hall of Fame left tackle. Like, you could, I think you could wrap your mind around that. Like,
don't get me started on a Bryce Huff rant, but I'm just going to point out Bryce Huff's cap hits over the next 3 years, $4.35 million, $7.5 million, $11.7 million.
And then what the rest is, I thought, wait, wasn't the 51, wasn't that mostly guaranteed? Or is it all incentives?
He's got a lot, they had four void years. So they're pushing a lot of dead money in the future. But I don't give a shit, Mike, because if it means the Jets win the Super Bowl, Do it. All right. I don't care about pushing dead money into the future if you're trying to win now. But
well, I care about pushing like dead money into like next year and stuff. Like, well, eventually you got to pay
out. His cap hit is super low for the next 3 years. Jets, I'm not going to get started on a rant. It's a good time. I'm happy with the Jets offseason. I will not agree that letting Bryce Huff walk was the right decision. I will change my mind if Will McDonald becomes Bryce Huff. That's when I'll change my mind.
Well, let's talk about the draft, because I actually was going to lead off my whole triage on the number 10 overall pick and kind of what to do, talking about Will McDonald, because on top of the fact I liked him as a prospect, I think part of the reason that I wasn't as upset with Will McDonald as everybody else was because, again, I erroneously judged their depth last year, and I'm like, all right, you know what? I never liked the idea of an all-in draft, like relying on a 22-year-old kid that's not a quarterback to make an impact. Like the Jamar Chases of the world are exceedingly rare, where a rookie helps take an average team to like the Super Bowl. Like, those don't happen all the time, especially at 15. Like, you're probably out of that range, if we're being honest. I'm like, okay, I don't hate it. And then we kind of know what happened in the year. Now they're at number 10. And for the longest time, it seemed like there were two positions where it looked like they were a lock to take one of these two positions. It was either offensive tackle or wide receiver. Those were the two. Wide receiver, mostly because there's a big three that's forming. Marvin Harrison Jr., top five lock, and then Malik Nehmers and Roma Dunze from LSU and Washington. Now, because the Chargers, who could have been a tight end team or a tackle team, they spent a lot of money for agency on tight ends. Hayden Hurst, Will Disley, you think they're solved there. They're probably going to take a receiver like Nehmers, especially because they got rid of Mike Williams, and then the Giants can maybe get a receiver like Roma Dunze if they're going to foolishly run it back with Daniel Jones. They shouldn't, but that's what they're going to do. So if that happens, all the big three are gone by the time the Jets pick. I like Brian Thomas a lot. I don't think the Jets will like him at 10, so I don't know if they'll get a receiver there. Obviously, offensive tackle, I think the dynamics completely change because they're not going to play year one. They're going to be a backup. And you want to take a backup tackle 10 overall when you're a contender now and you have a very unique position at number 10, it doesn't seem like a lot. The difference between 15 and 10 in the draft circle is that's not nothing. So to add a guy like maybe a Fashanu, because Joe Walt's not going to be there. So to add a guy like a Fashanu or a Fuaga or an Amarius Mims, who I'm just nervous about because I get Becton vibes from him.
Big guy.
He's big and gets hurt a lot. Like adding them as a backup could make sense long term, but I don't know about just taking someone that's going to be a complete backup and not even like a McDonald where you can rotate him into the game a little bit. That's where I at least justified the McDonald pick. So because of that, the hot topic has been Brock Bowers lately. If you go to the sports book, he's like plus 120, even plus 110. I saw somewhere he's like even money or a push to go to the Jets.
Wow.
Bowers is not only the top tight end, but in a weak tight end class, maybe Jatavion Sanders breaks this. He might be the only guy who goes top 50 as a tight end. It's not a very strong class, and Bowers in any class would be the number one tight end. It's like when Kyle Pitts came out of Florida and you're like, whoa, this is crazy. Like Bowers is that level of prospect. He's not like the biggest guy, but I've never seen, even Pitts, because Pitts was a little bigger. I don't know if I've seen a tight end with this good receiving skills.
Yeah.
I mean, he runs routes and makes catches and runs after catch like a wide receiver. That's the kind of weapon he is. You need him to block? Hell yeah, he can block. It's Georgia, power running. Bunch of pro running backs come out of there. He did it. He was clearly better than Darnell Washington, who I really liked, and I thought it was like a high second-round prospect. Ooh. I mean, he played over Darnell Washington. He caught more passes than Darnell Washington. This is a very unique guy to take at number 10 overall. And even if he's not just the mainline tight end, you could split him out wide, and there's your wide receiver three. Like, that's the talent you have here. The argument against it is, well, the Jets have tight end. I don't want to say covered, but if you went into the year with Tyler Conklin and Jeremy Rucker as your top two tight ends, I think off the year Conklin had, I don't think that's crazy. I think that's a perfectly serviceable tight end room. So why essentially you could basically end Rucker's Jets career? Because if you relegated a tight end three again, Conklin would still be there. Like that would be an indictment on Rucker, I think, if they end up taking Bowers. So that's one part, because they're saying, well, tight end set. And the other part is, well, you still need an offensive lineman because of the injury possibility. And I get all that, but I could very easily be talked into, let's take the freakish athlete who had 13 touchdowns as a freshman for Georgia and continued to play elite pretty much the entire time. Like the second he arrived, he was really good, and he kept being really good. Like it won't take much to talk me into that at number 10 overall.
See, I know this isn't good for content, but I'm happy with pretty much any route the Jets go in the first round, any realistic route. I mean, I wouldn't – we haven't even talked about it. What if this
opens up – let's take a kicker. Let's see how – what you do there.
What if this opens up the opportunity for the Jets to draft Dallas Turner? What if they just go that route? And they're like, hey, we still need another edge rusher to replace Bryce Hall. I don't think they would do that. I wouldn't particularly be happy about that. But assuming they go one of wide receiver, offensive tackle, or Brock Bowers, I'm happy with all three of those. I would have no issue with all three. I could see the argument for all three, and I have no issue with it. I think my preference still might lean tackle. And I say this because I know whoever you draft would not be starting week one. They would not be your presumptive starting left tackle, starting right tackle. But Tyron Smith's not playing 17 games. He's just not going to do that. Whoever you end up drafting at 10, if it's a tackle, they're probably going to end up playing 25-30% of snaps at a minimum next season, I would say. Because that's assuming Tyron Smith plays 13 games, which if he plays 13 games, he plays about 70% of snaps. That's fine. And I think whoever you end up drafting in the first round, if they play 30% of snaps on a Super Bowl roster or in a roster you hope to compete for a Super Bowl, that's not bad. That's not bad. That's about what Jermaine Johnson played his first season. That's more than what Will McDonald played last year. So I don't think that's necessarily bad. And on top of that, you have zero tackles under contract that are, you know, legitimate starting options past this season. Morgan Moses and Tyron Smith are both free agents after the year. Neither of them is a long-term solution. They're both older. Sure, you want to see what Carter Warren can develop into. I've seen nothing that tells me he's going to be a future starter. Maybe he develops a lot this summer. I don't know. But to this point, you can't rely on him to be that guy. So I think I'd still lean tackle, but I have no issue with drafting Bowers. Brock Bowers is an exceptional tight end prospect. He's not quite the athlete that Kyle Pitts was. He doesn't have the same physical measurables. He's not as big, like you said. I don't think he's quite as good of an athlete, but he's just such a natural receiver. And I think that's what always, like, natural is the word that stands out to me when I watch him. He's so smooth, such a natural route runner. He just knows how to play the position. I don't think he's the best blocker now, but he comes from a Georgia system, like you said, that emphasizes that with their tight ends. And I think he has the tools to be even better at that in the NFL. The comparison everyone always throws out there is George Kittle. I don't think he's as good of a blocker as Kittle is, but I think he can get to that point, or at least get
faster than Kittle.
He is faster than Kittle. I think when people make that comparison, they're talking about the yak ability and the ability to just kind of run through dudes. Cause that's what Bowers does. That's what Kittle does.
Bowers has made some catches this year too. Like, if you didn't know you didn't know his height and weight, or you didn't know what position he was, you're like, man, that's a good 6 foot, 190 pound receiver. You're like, oh, he's 6'4" and 240. Yep. And he's making, you know, toe tap catches and shaking off hits and balancing on one leg. I'm like, man, this is a freak.
And that's the thing. Like, whether you draft Bowers or a receiver, they're filling the same void to me. They're filling the exact same hole. Sure, one will be classified as a tight end. Sure, one will be classified as a wide receiver. You need another playmaker on this offense. Like, it's the same thing I said going into last year's draft. And now I'm going to convince myself that my preference isn't tackle. Again, I'm cool with whatever they do. But I still think the Jets need another playmaker on this offense. I think Mike Williams is an awesome, awesome addition. And it's not like as pressing of a need as I thought it was going into last year, because now Breece Hall has developed. And I think Breece Hall, you could argue, is the second best running back in the NFL. I think he's inarguably a top five running back at this stage. Tyler Conklin, I think, is a top 12-ish tight end. I think he's a very good player, top 12 to 15. I think we would say he's solidly in that range. And Jeremy Ruckert's a fine tight end too, who there's still untapped potential with him there. And you have a really good wide receiver duo with Garrett Wilson and Mike Williams. So you don't need like a receiver, another playmaker at 10. But if you want to just put this offense, put this skill group over the edge, and just, I mean, honestly, if you draft Brock Bowers or one of those three receivers, whether it's a Dunze or Neighbors or Harrison's not falling to 10, but if whoever falls to 10.
If Dunze and Neighbors falls to 10, I would be inconsolable. I don't know what to do with myself if that happens.
At this stage, Odunze is the only one who I think has a remote possibility of falling to 10. Neighbors and Harrison, I'd be stunned. But if you add a guy like Roma Dunze or Brock Bowers at 10, this Jets skill position group is one of the – it's top three to five in the NFL. And that might be underselling it. Like, I think you have a great wide receiver one in Garrett Wilson, a great wide receiver two in Mike Williams. If you draft Bowers, you have Bowers and Conklin and Rucker. That might be the best tight end room in the NFL. It's one of the best for sure. You have Breece Hall as a top five running back. That's incredible all around. You're a little thin on offensive line depth. You can address that in free agency. But this is the thing. I'm talking myself into all of these options. I think all of them are really good options. And it's very rare to see a team with a top 10 pick have as much draft flexibility as the Jets do, where they can look at that 10th overall pick and they go, we can kind of go best player available here. I know teams always say that they draft the best player available. What they mean is the best player available on their board, and their board is ranked by, you know, position. It's weighted by position. In this case, the Jets can really look at three or four positions and go, we can take whoever of these positions we like the most. I don't know if you want to talk quarterback, Mike, at 10. I don't think that's a possibility. Some have even thrown
that. If they take J.J. McCarthy at 10, I'm going to jump out of a window.
I guess that's who it would be probably. He's not even
going to
be
there. Yeah, that's
because he's not going to be
there. Caleb May and Daniels aren't going to be there.
I don't know about Drake May, man. He's fallen. If Drake May's there at 10.
If Drake May falls to 10, then I might quit, because there's no point in analyzing football anymore if that guy doesn't go top three.
It really sounds like he's falling, and teams will have Mark McCarthy over him, which is
insane. I don't know how, though. Nothing's happened since. Why?
I don't think he falls to 10. I think the top four quarterbacks.
Isn't Stroud supposed to be falling this time, too?
Well, yeah. I mean, he didn't go one, I guess.
Wasn't Levis supposed to go two to the Texans?
Malik Willis was, like, supposed to be a first, like, a lock for a first round. He fell to the third round. It happened. Like, shit happens. Baker Mayfield, 2 months before the draft, wasn't even a first round pick, and he went first overall. A lot changes. But I do think the top four quarterbacks will all go top 10. But if they really wanted to, it's a possibility. If they love a quarterback, if a guy like Drake May somehow falls to 10, you have the flexibility to consider that now. I don't think they would.
Or take QB3 at 10. That'd be fun, because Tyrod would be the backup.
Yeah, I don't think they will do it. And this would not be my preference. But I'm just saying it's a possibility, and it's because the Jets have given themselves so much flexibility because of the Tyron Smith signing, because of the Mike Williams signing.
Can you imagine how mad Aaron Rodgers would be? Remember how mad he got with Jordan Love?
That would be really dude, Packers fans would be like, they would rightfully be trolling. Like, I feel like some Packers fans are like, I quote tweeted, I forget his name, one of the Packers reporters, who was like, LOL, Alan Lazard and a 30-year-old Mike Williams coming off the torn ACL. It's going to be the slowest offense in NFL history. And I'm like, are you dense? Are you ignoring the two young superstars who ran sub 440s that they have as their two top playmakers on offense?
Mike Williams is fast anyway.
Right. I mean, sure, if you want to
say honestly, for his size, Lazard is kind of fast too. Like, I don't even get it.
And if your argument is, sure, Mike Williams coming up to an ACL, whatever, fine. Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall exist. They are the focal points of that offense. Not fucking Alan Lazard. Not Mike Williams. No, it's Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall. So that annoyed me. I saw that before, but it's just people unnecessarily hating. But yeah, man, I'm fine with whatever they do. Honestly, I'm fine with whatever they do in Tampa.
I think I'm really in on Bowers because I'm talking myself into what the ideal base offense could look like for the Jets. And it's not even necessarily spread them out three receivers because I think the Simpson and Moses additions signal a pretty big change in their offensive philosophy and that we're going to go a lot more gap and power 100%. Stuff as opposed to I think Tyron Smith too. Tyron Smith's not like a Shanahan zone guy. He's like, let me and you line up. Let's hit each other. Best man wins next play. That's been Tyron Smith for most of his career.
Yeah.
So I feel like they might go with a lot more like two tight end stuff. So if they do that and they don't move Bowers out, which you absolutely could put Bowers in the slot and just have him eat up on that. That'd be fun too.
Yep.
Just put big ass Brock Bowers in the slot and beat up on corners. But if you take Bowers, you can now put Hall out there. You can have a two tight end offense with Conklin and Bowers on the field at the same time. And then you still get Williams and Wilson out there at the same time. So you could, if you want to just get creative, like Bowers could be, remember when the Jaguars took Denard Robinson and they drafted him as OW offensive weapon?
Okay. I mean, I feel like that never works out, though.
Brock Bowers had like 12 carries last year. Like they ran him on like end arounds and stuff. Like, I feel like Georgia used him all over the place. Why can't the Jets?
Classifying a receiver or a player as like an offensive weapon never. Remember with the Lions, they were Jameer Gibbs, where they said they were using that way, and then they just used him as a running back? Like,
well, I mean, Jameer Gibbs was good, though.
But he was good, but they just used him as a running back. Like, they lied. He wasn't used all over the place. He was a running back. But I agree. I think an offense where your five eligible receivers are Garrett Wilson, Mike Williams, Tyler Compton, Brock Bowers, and Breece Hall, that is one of the best like five eligible receiver groups that you could have in the NFL. Like that would rank up there with any skill group in the NFL. So I'm with you with that. I would love Bowers. I would love whatever the Jets are going to want to do. If they draft Fuaga at 10, if they draft Fashanu at 10, if they draft Bowers, if they draft Adunze, I will be happy with any of those moves.
Well, here's the situation I want to ask about because I want to see if, like, I really think they might trade down too.
Okay.
Like, if they really want a receiver, I feel like maybe you move to like 8 because they don't have a second round pick.
So yeah.
I don't know how badly they want that pick back.
100%. That's absolutely a possibility as well. They could trade down. That's for sure a possibility.
Now, the Jets are not done in free agency yet. They have a couple more holes to fill. Again, I think the most of the pressing needs have been taken care of, but they still have a couple depth signings they need to make. Maybe get a new starting safety. Like, I know, Justin, you had some big ideas about, like, specific names that you think could really be impactful for the Jets if Joe Douglas wants to go after them.
Yeah, I mean, safety, I feel like they're probably going to add a safety, but I think your starters going into next year are Chuck Clark and Tony Adams. I'd be surprised if whoever they add ends up starting over them. But even still, like the Jets played three safeties a lot last year. So they really need that third safety. Right now it's Jarek Bernard Converse. I don't think he's going to be your third safety going into next year. I know that they would love to bring back Ashton Davis from what it sounds like he's exploring his options and looking for a possible starting opportunity. But if that doesn't materialize, if he doesn't get the opportunities he's looking for sure, I can 100% see him coming back. I don't think that they'd add anybody, you know, big. Maybe like I don't think Tashawn Gibson was signed, and I'd mention him as a possible option. He didn't cross paths with Robert Saleh in San Francisco, but he comes from the 49ers system. He's older, he's like 34, but he still played at a pretty high level. Kind of gives them more of like that, I'd say, traditional free safety. He's weird because he was kind of more of like a strong safety, I think, earlier in his career, and then he kind of swapped and changed roles. But that's somebody I'd look at. I think
wasn't he with the Jaguars when they had that insane defense?
Yeah, and I think he crossed paths with Saleh in Jacksonville, actually.
That might not. Maybe. Was Shanahan I think Shanahan got hired by that point. He took Saleh away. I think like 17 was the first year that they
Gibson was in. No, he was 2016. Salah was in Jacksonville, so he was with 2016. Yep, there you go.
That's a really deep free throw. Hey, I knew this guy 8 years ago.
I don't think it would be something like that. I think technically he also crossed paths with Ron Middleton in Jacksonville. So hey, this too. But I think it would be more so like, you know, he's a good fit for this defense because he comes from a similar system in San Francisco. He played in San Francisco the last 2 years, so he was also there with D'Amico Ryans as well, who worked under Salah. So there's a connection there. I'd like to look at the running back market because I do think the Jets will sign a veteran running back at some point. Izzy Abanikanda, I love his potential. I love his ceiling. I know people are like, oh yeah, he's going to be RB2 next year. I'd be very surprised if Izzy Abanikanda was RB2. I don't think he showed anything that makes me think he can handle that role. And even more so, I just think they need somebody specifically to handle a role that he doesn't fill and that Breece Hall doesn't fill. And that's one of those more older veteran short yardage guys. Ezekiel Elliott is probably my top target there because Ezekiel Elliott, like I mentioned before, this isn't a Dalvin Cook situation where he's completely cooked, where he's completely washed. Zeke was still pretty solid last year. I think it was a difficult situation for him. The Patriots' offensive line wasn't very good. They had injuries. Their running game as a whole struggled. Ramondre Stevenson, I know he came on a little bit later in the year, but he had a rough start to the season. So did Ezekiel Elliott. I think Zeke is still very effective as a short yardage red zone guy who's also a good pass blocker and a good pass catcher. That's really what the Jets should need. Sign Zeke to, you know, $2.5 million contract, whatever. Have him play 15 to 20% of snaps. Let Breece take on pretty much the rest of the snaps. Maybe give Izzy a couple of snaps a game just as a change of pace guy. Maybe he could break one. That would be my ideal running back room for the Jets. I did like Deontay Foreman as an option. He just signed with the Browns. Another guy they can consider, Damian Harris is out there. Cordarrelle Patterson is another one too. If you're looking for a kind of bigger bodied,
one of your offensive weapons. Arthur Smith's like, we have this position called the Joker position.
Yeah. He was just not used at all. I still like Cordarrelle Patterson. I think he can fill that role as like a bigger bodied pass catching back.
He can be a returner. Cough, cough, Nicole.
He could be a returner. I mean, Xavier Gibson, I know he had his moments, but he also, He was a little shaky, so maybe they bring in some competition there. I think my preference is still Zeke. I like Damian Harris as an option as long as the medicals are cleared, because I know he had that scary injury last year. But I do think that they will add a veteran running back as well as an edge rusher. I know they're meeting with Jadeveon Clowney today. Maybe that gets done. If that gets done, awesome. Like if they sign Jadeveon Clowney, Mike, like he's really good. Like he's genuinely really good still.
Knowing that Ravens fan base, like it's been a weird offseason because they've let a lot of guys go, but they mostly hate Harbaugh. They pretty much every problem the Ravens have had the last couple of years has been Harbaugh.
Hilarious.
I'm like, man, they're really losing a lot of guys. It's always, well, we always do free agency late. Trust DaCosta, trust Eric DaCosta. Like right now, their projected starting offensive line, because the guys left, is Andrew Voorhees, Ben Cleveland, and Daniel Falele at the two guard spots and right tackle. Voorhees, and they're like, yeah, they're like excited about that. They really believe, because Voorhees was like a top 75, 80 player before he got hurt. So they're like, well, you know, he's there. Cleveland is okay. And then like Falele's ready to start, which I guess if you, a year after John Simpson, I don't see it. Like if you did John Simpson so frequently, I don't see, and Patrick McCary, I could see why they'd be confident. But, and again, you have Lamar just on a base level. When you have Lamar Jackson on MVP and Derrick Henry and Matt Ibike, you're fine. But Clowney would be the one where if he went left, they would really get mad.
Yeah.
All three of their top sack guys were free agents last year. Matt Ibike, they kept. Clowney and Kyle Van Noyer, they're probably not going to keep. But Clowney was fantastic, still defends the edge well. Even the couple years before that, when he kept bouncing around and he didn't have a ton of sacks, like, you know, the Browns and the Titans and stuff like that, like the Seahawks, like he was still getting double teamed a lot and his pressure rate was not terrible. Baltimore got him more one-on-one and look what he did. Like that would be such a good, I just don't know if they would spend that much money on him because he took like a sweetheart nothing deal last year. Now he's not going to cost that. So it's a little bit of a risk, but man, they got Tyron Smith. So who knows? I used to hate Clowney because I remember I was like, this is before I went full time. I was freelancing way back like when COVID hit. Mm-hmm. And that was like right during free agency. So for the first couple of weeks, you had free agency news and then that at least kept you covered. And then there was like nothing for however long in any sport. And Jadeveon Clowney was like the only big free agent who didn't sign for a very long time.
He always does that.
Because there were no sports news, every time Jadeveon Clowney would wipe his ass, you'd hear, oh, Jadeveon Clowney did this. He might go to the Browns. He might go do this. And I just got – there was that and like labor negotiations for baseball about like when the season was going to start. I'm like, can we get anything else? So I used to not like Clowney, but he has since redeemed himself in my eyes.
The thing is, the Jets can still create more cap space. Like, they still have a good amount of financial flexibility. They can – I mean, I would love to extend DJ Reed, but they could also restructure DJ Reed. They could restructure Quinnen. They could restructure John Franklin Myers. They could create $20, $30 million in cap like that, like very easy if they want to. So there's part of me that looks at the Mike Williams signing and looks at the Tyron Smith signing and says, what if the Jets are just so committed to going all in that they give Jadeveon Clowney – you know, $8, $9 million a year. And they're like, or for 1 year.
Might need more than that.
I mean, Spotrac, I think, projected it at $7 million. So I don't know if it would be that high. I think at this stage, like because he just jumps around so much. He's almost like a mercenary. Like he goes from team to team. I really don't think he's going to get more than 10, 11 million. I think that would be surprising if it was, I mean, maybe with max incentives, sure, it could get to that point. But I think realistically, $8, $9 million is probably what he'll end up signing for.
The other thing too, though, is one of his top suitors is the Dolphins because Anthony Weaver, the Ravens defensive line coach from last year, is their defensive coordinator now.
Right.
And again, Miami, good team, no state tax. You live in Florida. Like if you, so not only does getting Clowney, not only do you get Clowney, but then the Dolphins don't get him.
Yep.
So you have to consider that.
After the Williams signing, I'm at a point where, like, I really think any guy that the Jets bring in to visit, like, they have a real chance of signing. Like, I really think that they're committed to going all in. So I don't know if there's a situation where he's going to sign, like, this week or sign him. He's visiting with them today. If he leaves the building, I don't think that necessarily means he's not going to sign because I feel like he's going to take his time more so than Mike Williams did. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but I really think there's a real chance the Jets sign him. And what people are overlooking, we say, oh, yeah, Jadeveon Clowney is still good. Last season, Jadeveon Clowney had 14 more pressures and more sacks than he has ever had in a season before. Last season, statistically, was the best pass rushing season of his entire career. He's a three-time Pro Bowler, former number one overall pick. He was the best pass rusher he's ever been last year. And part of that was, I believe, the Ravens faced played more passing downs than like any team in the NFL last year. The teams threw on them a lot. But
they were up most of the time, so you had to.
They were up a lot. But he was still extremely efficient. And like you also mentioned, even when his sack numbers haven't been there and his pressure numbers haven't always been there, he still remains one of the best run defending edge defenders in the league. Like he is a excellent, excellent run setter or edge setter and a run defender. So even if you don't get the same pass rush production out of him that you did last year, like he's still great. Like he's still really, really good. I think he's around the tier of what Jermaine Johnson is right now, or at least what Jermaine Johnson was last year. I know Johnson was a Pro Bowler, but like Clowney was pretty much just as good as Johnson was last year. Now, of course, you're projecting Johnson to continue to take leaps forward, but Clowney's really, really good. So if they sign Jadeveon Clowney for $7-8 million, whatever it is, that'll make the loss of Bryce Huff feel a lot more insignificant. And they don't necessarily need it, but man, this roster will be still, like, it's already stacked. It would be even more stacked if they could find a way to get a deal done with Clowney.
If you want to watch something really funny, go watch Warren Sapp watch Jadeveon Clowney at the combine because Clowney came in at like 260 something and he ran, yeah, I think, like a 4.49 in the 40. And you just see Sapp's like eyes just get, they're like dinner plates. They just start bugging. He looked like he saw a ghost. Dude, like an alien. Like it was like, whoa, what the hell is this?
Clowney's highlights from South Carolina are some of my favorite highlights of any player that's come out. Like
Clowney in high school. You want to see funny, go watch that.
Oh, good Lord. He's probably still like 250 pounds.
Oh, bigger than that. And these kids are the quarterback for the other team probably because he went to school in South Carolina, but not like one of these, you know, IMG Academy, you know, football factories that play on the top teams every year. So we're just playing regular kids.
Oh, goodness.
Some kid gets out of, you know, pre-calculus. He's like 5'9", 180. And then Jadeveon Clowney just rips this man's head off, this kid's head off, this child's head off.
It's wild.
I'm like, man, it's like Derrick Henry was like that too, where he'd run for like 400 yards every game, just barreling people over. I'm like, that's the difference between college athletes and pro athletes, man, or even high school athletes.
There you go.
That is,
well, one edge rusher, one edge rusher the Jets won't be signing, because Brian points in the chat, Derek Barnett, frequent Jets trade target rumor guy, re-signed with the Texans. So good for him.
Oh, that, no, not please don't go. Oh, no.
Not Derek Barnett. That's fine. I you know what? I'm going to say it now, and maybe I look like an idiot. I'll make a prediction. I think the Jets signed Jadeveon Clowney. I think they do it. That's not based on any information. It's a hunch. I think they get a deal done with Jadeveon Clowney. I don't know if it's today. I really feel like he's going to take more time than Mike Williams to make a decision.
I think it'll be an Odell situation where the Ravens just at the 11th hour overpay him. Especially because, again, that is true. They are typically a very – this is our price. They're Scott Boras of the NFL, where this is our price.
Yeah.
Eventually somebody's going to meet it. Eventually things will come down and you'll sign for us. So
we'll see. It'd be fun if the Jets added another former Ravens player and just continued that, you know, exodus. The
Ravens, exodus. Niners, or Titans, or Packers.
Or Packers, yeah, any of those four.
I guess Mike Williams and Tyron are the exceptions. But thank you for joining us at the Jet Press Podcast. A busy week, one of the better weeks since we've been doing this podcast, because how many weeks do they add Mike Williams and Tyron Smith? So hard to complain about the last couple moves. If you want to go find our analysis of the other moves, which we had kind of mixed reactions about, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, wherever you get your podcasts. We are there. We're on YouTube at the Jet Press. Like, if you like the stream and if you give a good review on Apple Podcasts, like, that is just for the business end of things, the algorithm pumping us up, that really does help. So, Justin, feel free to – the new fan of a Mike Williams and Tyron Smith employing team.
Yeah.
How are we feeling?
I'm just happy I don't have to complain about the Jets overpaying Javon Kinlaw.
Oh, we will.
I don't need to complain about that anymore, because this is so much more significant. All right. Last week, we were happy about the Morgan Moses signing, and the rest was like, whatever. Now, I don't have to worry about that. I don't have to complain about Javon Kinlaw, because the Jets made a couple of really good moves. Lastly, shout out Jets fans for what has been a wild couple of days. Especially last day was one of the most insane days I think ever, specifically on Jets Twitter. If you're watching this on Twitter, if you frequent Jets Twitter at all, what a wild day. Shout out NYJ Matt. He's getting recognized in, it was on SportsCenter, The Athletic. I mean, Good Morning Football, everywhere. This fan base is special sometimes. The community is special sometimes. And hopefully one day the team will reward us with the Super Bowl with wins.
Just sheer volume, though, Mike Williams going from the Chargers fan base in L.A. to the Jets. I mean, look, there are a lot of Chargers fans that are very passionate. They're just in San Diego.
Are there even a lot of Chargers fans just as a general?
Oh, when they were at Qualcomm, those things were packed. They just moved to a city where the eighth biggest team.
Yeah. Pretty much.
They have fans. They're just not in L.A.
Well, he's going to have a lot more fans, I think, showing up to the stadiums now in New York. And I think he's already been welcomed by Jets Twitter. So shout out Mike Williams. Shout out NYJ Matt. Shout out Jets fans for making the last few days pretty special and pretty cool. But until next time, thank you for joining us on the show today. You can follow Mike on Twitter at @ByMikeLuciano. Follow me on Twitter at Justin T. Freed. Follow the Jet Press at the Jet Press. You can download the Jet Press podcast wherever you get your podcast. Check us out on YouTube and TikTok. For as long as that's around, subscribe, like, hit that notification bell. You guys know what to do. We stream live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you all for listening to Jet Press Podcast. I've been Justin Freed. That has been Mike Luciano. We'll see you guys next week.
Let's see who they sign by the time we go live next week.